So Parshas Acharei Kedoshim, page 636. Just as an introduction, I didn't do an overview this week because it would take pages and pages. Because it's a, especially when it's together, Acharei Kedoshim, it's so action-packed. There's so many mitzvahs. Just to give you a bit of an insight, so I'll give you a bit of an introduction, first of all. In Parshas, just in terms of mitzvahs, first of all, in Parshas Acharei, there are 2 positive mitzvahs and 26 negative mitzvahs. So that's 28 mitzvahs out of the 613. And in Kedoshim, there are 13 positive mitzvahs and 38 negative. So I don't know what the total of that is, but it's a lot. So with Acharei, it's a bit more structured. In Acharei Mois, first of all, we have all the mitzvahs to do with Yom Kippur. So the first, in fact, we lain Acharei on Yom Kippur. In Kippur morning and afternoon, actually. But the first part is about the service in the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur. And all the mitzvahs that go with it. There are a few mitzvahs to do with sacrifices and shechting animals. For example, the idea of Kisui Hadam, the mitzvah to cover blood when you shecht a chicken or a wild animal and so on. And then we have many, many mitzvahs, almost like 25 mitzvahs, that deal with prohibited relationships. So all the mitzvahs of marriage and adultery and incest and everything that's got to do with who is permitted and who's not permitted to have relations with or to marry is in this parasha, repeated in Kedoshim. It's interesting that the Torah had the whole list twice. In this week's parasha, in Acharei, it's just in the form of prohibition. Next week's parasha, it's more in the form of consequence. In other words, the kares, the excision, or the prohibition, or the consequences that go with the different prohibited relationships, that's repeated again in Parshas Kedoshim. So it's all repeated again. It's not counted as separate mitzvahs there. And I said there were so many mitzvahs in Kedoshim, it doesn't include that, but it's just repeated again. Interesting, in the middle of the whole thing, in the middle of the prohibited relationships in Acharei, suddenly there's just one isolated mitzvah about got to do with idol worship. There was a pagan worship in ancient times where they would give up their children, they would burn their children for Avodah Zarah. It was like a crazy practice which people engaged in. It's called Moilech. And one of the prohibitions of Avodah Zarah is, in this week's Parashah Acharei, put some reason in the middle of all the prohibited relationships. Maybe there's a message there that like Avodah Zarah is like a prohibited relationship. It's like adultery. Instead of having belief in Hashem, we cheat on Hashem, so to speak, and we go to other gods. So maybe that's the connection. Parshas Kedoshim, interesting, is a very, very important parsha. In fact, there's many, many fundamental mitzvahs to do with between man and man, between man and God. We'll look at a few soon. And in fact, Rashi says that Parshas Kedoshim was actually said different to a lot of the Torah. Most parts of the Torah were communicated by Moshe Rabbeinu, but when he used to come down the mountain, he would first teach Aaron, Aaron and his sons, and they would teach others. It wasn't necessarily done in a great assembly. Parshas Kedoshim was spoken to the whole congregation because there are such fundamentals of Torah, and we'll have a look at that soon. So I thought just to begin with, we'll just learn a few psukim from Parshas Acharei Mois, go into one or two ideas, and then go into Kedoshim, and I want to develop an idea there. Okay, so page 636, let's have a look at it. So Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe, Hashem spoke to Moshe, Acharei Mois Shnei B'nei Aaron, after the death of the 2 sons of Aaron, B'korvosam Lifnei Hashem Vayomusu, when they came close to Hashem, and they died. What is it talking about? It's talking about Nadav and Avihu. In Parshas Shmini, we learned Nadav and Avihu, the 2 sons of Aaron, went into the Mishkan. They brought a foreign fire. They went in when they weren't supposed to go in. They went where they weren't supposed to go, and so on, and they died. This parsha comes in continuation of that. Hashem speaks to Moshe after the death of 2 sons of Aaron to give the following mitzvah, that only certain times and only certain people can go into the Holy of Holies, and so on. That's what follows with the Holy Yom Kippur service. Let's have a look. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hashem spoke to Moshe, Daber el Aaron achicha, speak to Aaron your brother, Val yovoi b'chol eis al ha-kodesh, and he should not come at any time into the Holy of Holies. He cannot do that. Even Aaron ha-kohen, even the Kohen Gadol, which is out in the inside of the curtain, facing the cover of the Ark, and then he won't die. In other words, if he goes any time, he will perish. But if he doesn't, if he keeps to my commandment, then it'll be okay. When is that? Ki be'onon eroi alakapoyres. I'm going to reveal myself on top of the cover of the Aron in a cloud. Now this is a reference to the cloud of incense, which was brought on Yom Kippur. Then when Aaron and all subsequent high priests, when they prepare themselves properly, then they can go into the Holy of Holies. They went into the Holy of Holies with a pan of coals and incense, put the incense on the coals, created the smoke of fire, which was this fire, this cloud of smoke, which was representative of the Shekhinah, of the Divine Presence, and that's the way Aaron used to go in. But in preparation to that, there was a certain set of sacrifices that he had to bring. What does the next pasuk say? Bezois yavoi Aaron el HaKodesh. With this, Aaron can prepare to go to the Holy of Holies. Bepar ben bokor lechatos, with a bull as a sin offering, the ayil le'oila, and a ram as a burnt offering. So there were two special sacrifices, among others, that the Kohen Gadol would bring on Yom Kippur, which would be a bull and a ram, and that would be the preparation of him going into the Holy of Holies, which he was permitted to do only on Yom Kippur and only with that preparation. Okay. I want to show you a little insight on that from the Ben Ish Chai. I've quoted him before. Ben Ish Chai has some wonderful commentary on Chumash. And he quotes a Medrash. The Medrash says that, you see, it says there that Aaron must go in with two things, the bull and the ben bakar, from cattle in other words, and an ayil. Where the Medrash says that the par ben bakar, the bull that came from cattle, that was corresponding to Avraham Avinu. Because where do we find the reference of Avraham and cattle? When the three angels came and he wanted to get them food, it says, "Ve'el ha-bakar rots Avraham." Avraham Avinu ran to the cattle to get calves and shech them and prepare a meal for the angels. So that reference of Avraham and bakar was connected to Avraham, and therefore when Aaron goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he's going in with the merit of the forefathers, the par ben bakar, that's for Avraham Avinu. Then says the Medrash, ayil le'oila, the ram as a burnt offering, that's Yitzchak. Because you know that Yitzchak went on the Akedah, at the last minute Hashem told Avraham Avinu to take him off, but then they found this ram that was stuck in the bushes, and Avraham Avinu offered the ram as a substitute for Yitzchak. Right? So therefore the ram is Yitzchak. When Ish Chai asks a question, he says, why no Yaakov? What happened to Yaakov? So if the Kohen Gadol is going to, in the schus, in the merit of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, our forefathers, he has the schus of Avraham, he has the schus of Yitzchak, where's Yaakov in all of this? So he says, interesting thing, he says that, from the Megala Amukos. Megala Amukos was a great Kabbalistic work. And he says that he writes over there like this, that Avraham Avinu corresponds to this 248 mitzvahs asay, positive commandments, right? And Yitzchak to the negative commandments. Now this is explained on many levels. First of all, we know that the Torah is made up of two things, right? Positive commandments and negative commandments. There are 248 positive commandments, 365 negative commandments, Ramach and Shasa. Now, positive commandments is about connecting to Hashem. Negative commandments is more about staying away from that which is not good, right? That's what it is. Doing good and staying away from evil. We know that corresponds to Chesed and Gvura. Connecting to Hashem, loving Hashem, doing something for Hashem, that's Chesed. Disciplining ourselves, self-control, not indulging in things which are bad, is Gevura. Now we know, of course, Avraham and Yitzchak is Chesed and Gevura. We know that. Because the three fathers are the first three of the emotions, Chesed, Gevura, and Tiferes. So Avraham is Chesed, Yitzchak is Gevura. Therefore, Avraham is the positive commandments, Yitzchak is the negative commandments. It's also hinted in their names, interestingly enough, because Avraham, the gematria of Avraham, is 248. Do you know that? Yeah? 248, gematria of Avraham. Got to do with the 248 limbs of a person also. Before it was Avram, before he had the Bris Milah, not because his limbs weren't perfect, but when he had the Bris Milah, then he was added a hay, and that made Ramach 248, but also corresponds to 248 mitzvahs. Yitzchak doesn't correspond to 365, but there's a fascinating hint to the negative commandments in the name Yitzchak, and that is, there's the Torah has many different consequences for different transgressions. One of them is malchus, which is lashes essentially, right? Which was given in the times of the temple if people did certain things. Now there's in the Gemara has a long list of the whole thing. You don't get lashes for any one of the 365 averis. There are only certain ones. There's a whole bunch of different rules. It has to be number one. It has to be transgressions that are active. So we have something called a lav she'ein boy maisa. If a transgression doesn't have an action, so for example, not at all lashon hara is one of the 365 negative commandments. There's no lash there because it's not an action. It's a speech which can be more destructive sometimes, but it's not an action. Or for example, owning chametz on Pesach, right? If you have chametz before Pesach, it's not an avera. Owning chametz on Pesach is two negative commandments. If someone owns chametz on Pesach, which is why we sell it or get rid of it, that's a transgression, but it doesn't have the punishment of malchus because it's not an action, it's a passive thing. You just keep owning it. You don't get rid of it, right? It's what you don't do, rather what you do do. But it's you shall not own chametz on Pesach. So it's a negative commandment, but without an action, it's passive. Similarly, for example, we have negative commandments which are connected to positive commandments. So for example, someone steals, very terrible thing, but you don't get malchus. Why? Because there's a positive commandment that if you steal, you have to give it back. So therefore, there's a positive action that sort of connects and fixes the negative commandments, there's no malchus. There are certain things that are worse than malchus, like, for example, things which have a capital punishment. That there's no malchus because it's capital punishment. So there's no, anyway, so on and so forth. There's lots of different messages. It comes out that how many negative commandments are there that you get malchus for? 208, which is the gematria of Yitzchak. Right? So Yitzchak is the gematria of the amount of negative commandments you get malchus for. So therefore you see a connection between Yitzchak and negative commandments. Okay. Bottom line is, Avraham is positive commandments, Yitzchak is negative commandments. Now how does a Yid keep both mitzvahs? They're very different. One is chesed, one is gevura. Right? One is doing, and you find this with lots of people. Some people are very okay with positive commandments. They like doing stuff. I'll do for Hashem, I'll make kiddush, I'll keep Shabbos, put on mezuzah. Don't tell me what I can't do. Like that, you know, that's already different. I'm not gonna, you know. You want to be put on tefillin every day? No problem. Light Shabbos candle, no problem. But you tell me I can't do something that I want to do, that's already a problem. Huh? Yeah. Other people maybe are different. Other people are very, very disciplined people. But they're not so enthusiastic with the extra things you got to do. They're very disciplined to stay away from things that are day, right? They're very different mindsets. But the way we connect both things, both come from one God, and they're both one process. And they're both part of one Torah, which is really the concept of Yaakov. You know, Yaakov is synonymous with Torah. So Avraham is positive commandments. Yitzchak is negative commandment. Yaakov is the combination of both. Because you know that Yaakov was connected with Tiferet, which is harmony, which is the idea of Torah. Because Torah is the truth. Torah combines everything. When you learn Torah and connect to Torah, so if Hashem wants you to do a positive commandment, it's a positive commandment. Negative commandment, it's a negative commandment. Whatever it is, it is. It's a part of Hashem. And that's Yaakov. Yaakov was about Torah. Yaakov was called an Ish Tom Yoshev Oyholim. He was a simple man, not simple, although simple in the sense sincere, and he sat in the tents. He learned Torah. That's what Yaakov was. Yaakov was all about learning Torah. Now he says, he quotes from somewhere that the Torah is sometimes referred to Zois. You know, in Shul, when you pick up the Torah, what do we say? V'zois ha-Torah. This is the Torah. Now go back to the Pasuk. Pasuk Gimel. It says, B'zois Yovai Aaron ala Kodesh. This is how Aaron goes into the Kodesh, with Zois, with Torah. When you go in with Torah, then you can split it up between the Par Ben Bakar, which is Avraham Avinu, the positive commandments, the Ayil Oilo, the Ram, which is negative commandments, but it all comes from the one Torah. See, in fact, says the Ben Ish Chai, Yaakov is definitely there. Yaakov doesn't need his own carbon. Yaakov is the combination between the mitzvahs, I say, the positive commandments and the negative commandments, and it's all connected with the Zois. This is what Aaron goes in with the Torah. Sorry?
Where is that?
In the beginning of the Pasuk. Pasuk Gimel. Pasuk 3. So, B'zois Yavah Aaron Alakoy. Aaron went in with the S'chus, the power of Torah, which then translated into Avraham and Yitzchak, positive commandments and negative commandments. So, in fact, he is there, but not as a specific carbon, as more of a combination of both, the mitzvahs Aseh and the mitzvahs Lois Aseh, the positive and the negative. Okay. Ben Ish Chai is fantastic. He has some amazing, amazing innovative things. Okay, let's go to page 656 now. Parshas Kedoshim. Okay. So Parshas Kedoshim starts with an introductory pasuk, a general pasuk, and then goes into a string of mitzvahs, many, many, many mitzvahs, which we refer to as foundational mitzvahs. Let's have a look at some of them. And then we're going to try and have a look at some stuff. Okay. So Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe Leimer, Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu, saying, now, look what he says in the next pasuk. Daber el kol adas b'nei Yisrael. Speak to the entire congregation of the Jewish people, meaning, as Rashi says, that this had to be said. I'll read you the Rashi. Rashi says that this teaches us that this parasha was said with hakel, meaning it was said with everyone together, because most of the foundations of Torah depend on Parshas Kedoshim. So if you want to get the crux of Torah, this is the parasha, Parshas Kedoshim. Right? And we'll see, it has like really, I mean, some of them are repeated elsewhere in the Torah, but it's a collection of really the fundamental stuff of Torah, both in human relationships and in divine service. So, what's the introduction? He says, speak to all of them and tell them, Amarta alem, Kedoshim to you, be holy. Make yourselves holy. Now we've gone to this other years, I'm not going to do it today, but that's the whole discussion, what that means. Everyone, Kedoshim to you either means be holy in terms of your material life, in relationships, lives, and in food, and so on and so on. But it just means, but it's a general thing, connect to God and be holy. Ki Kadosh ani Hashem Elokeichem, because I am Hashem, your God, is holy. And then just starts with many, many mitzvahs. So the first one it talks about, first pasuk is, first of all, Ish Imoi V'Oviv Tiro. Each man shall fear his mother and father. V'Shapsoi Sait Ishmoiru, and keep my Shabbos. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem, your God. Often when it talks about, we have in this pasuk puts it together. We have it with the Mishkan also, but in this pasuk it puts honoring or fearing parents, respecting parents, and Shabbos together. Rashi explains to teach us that it is a foundational mitzvah to respect and to honor parents, but the exception is when they tell you to do something that Hashem doesn't want you to do. So if parents tell a child to do something that's contrary to Torah, the child no longer has a mitzvah of honoring and respecting parents, because both the child and the parent are obligated to honor Hashem, right? So that's why it's together. So an example, I'll give you a Shabbos. Before we go on, it goes about many mitzvahs. I want to just stop there with I'm just picking this mitzvah as an example. I'm not going into all the mitzvahs of the Torah, of the Parashat Kedoshim. I'll just show you the interesting thing. You know, in the Seres HaDibros, in the Ten Commandments, it says, honor your parents, honor your father and mother. Over here it says to fear your father and mother. By the way, the word fear is a mistranslation, really. It doesn't mean to fear, it means to it's more about respecting, right? What's the difference between honor and respect? Also misunderstood sometimes. Kavod, honoring parents, is more about taking care of them. In general, if you look into the halachas of kibud, we've gone through this before on Sundays and Thursday morning. If you look into the halachas in Shulchan Aruch of kibud av v'aim, honoring parents and respecting parents, it's very different to Western modern civilization. The halachas are unbelievable. The lengths to which a person has to go to honor parents. And the other thing that comes out of there, which is interesting, is that, you know, the pasuk of kabbad es avicha v'simecha often gets thrown, I think, at children. You know, you've got to respect your parents, right? It's almost relegated to like a child's mitzvah. In fact, it's not a child's mitzvah. Children under bar mitzvah and bas mitzvah are actually exempt from most mitzvahs. That's just to do it because of chinuch, right? When you really become obligated to the mitzvahs is when you're older. And you see in the halachas of kibud av v'aim that actually applies more to older people and taking care of parents who are older. For example, helping them and providing for them and things like that, making sure they have what to wear, what to eat, all this kind of stuff is all part of kibud av v'aim, right? Helping them to do things, buying things for them and so on and so forth, doing them favors. It's all part of kibud. This pasuk is yiras av v'aim, which is more respect. That's things like not sitting in their places, not contradicting them, talking respectfully to them, and so on and so forth. One of the mitzvahs that is one of the halachas that is part of this, which astoundingly so, as I've seen it changing in our modern times, even with parents, is about the prohibition of calling parents by their first name. You know, I'm not talking about parents-in-law now. I'm talking about parents, right?
Parents-in-law
is not exactly the same halacha. The real Jewish way is not to call parents-in-law by their first name either. However, if they want you to, maybe you can, and if it's not disrespectful, they are. It's not as strict. It's not as strict, but yeah. To be honest, the real Jewish way is not to call parents law by their first name either. But when it comes to parents, it's a halacha. You have to. You're not allowed to call them the first name. In fact, Rabbi Akiva Eger, I'm telling you, I want to tell you a cute little shaila that I saw, also in the Ben Ish Chai, but more in his halachic for him. So Rabbi Akiva Eger, in fact, has a whole thing about a story brought in the Gemara where someone quoted their father by their first name. Now, this prohibition, by the way, about calling parents with their first name, even not in front of them. It's not to them. It's b'chal mentioning your father, which is the whole shalak. Like, let's say if someone asks you for a man, let's say he gets asked in shul about how do you call him up to the Torah, there's a whole question of how you can say his father's name. Interesting, right? And the way you get around it is what Rabbi Akiva Eger explains, because he talks about cases in the Gemara where it appears people did use their father's name, right? And the answer to that is that when using your father's name or mother's name for the same reason, I'm just saying, but this is a case of the father's name, and it's used with a title, like you do it in a respectful way. So you say, my name is Michal Ben Reb someone, or Rav someone, or Reb someone, or, you know, you put a title to it, or my teacher so and so, or my, you know, then it becomes okay. An interesting discussion is brought how that fits in with the famous medrash. It's a famous medrash which has to do with the Shema that we say every single day, and Baruch Shem. Famous medrash when Yaakov Avinu was about to pass away, right? So he gathered all his children around him, and he was about to reveal to them the time of the coming of Mashiach, and the Shekhinah, the divine presence, suddenly went away from him. So the Medrash says he was very worried. He thought the reason was because maybe he always thought all these 12 children were tzaddikim, and they all believed in Hashem, and they were all not like Avraham and Yitzchak, who had children that weren't, right? He thought he was okay. And now suddenly he's there, and the Shekhinah goes away from him. So he thought to himself, maybe some of them are imposters. Maybe they're not telling the truth. Maybe there's some. So he turns to them and he says, are you all in the program? Like, are you all properly believing in Hashem, and you're all, you know, you want to understand. Maybe some of you are transgressing something. Maybe you are not believing in Hashem properly. So the Medrash says that they turned around to him and they said, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Shema Yisrael, listen Yisrael. We all believe Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That's where the Shema Yisrael originally comes from. Later on, it's Pasuk in the Chumash. To which he responded, said the Medrash. He was so happy. He responded, Oh, Baruch Shem Kvayd Malchus Elo Eilam Void.
They called him his name?
Oh. So that's the question, right? That's the question. Before I give you the answer, so interesting thing, by the way, which I once saw in a B'nai Yisachar, a beautiful thing. If you take all the Shvatim, because what happens was, it says Yaakov didn't want to reveal the end of time. He wanted to reveal Mashiach is going to come. What's that called? That's called Kates. Kates means the end of time, Kates. Right? So it says, Bikosh legalos esa Kates. He wanted to reveal the end, the Kates, and the Shekhinah went away from him, and he thought maybe there's some transgression among his children. And they shouldn't. There wasn't a saying Shema Yisrael. So B'nai Soska says, if you take all the names of the Shvatim, all talking about the genius minds of these great commentaries on the Chumash, if you take all the names of the Shvatim and put them together, you will find every letter of the Aleph base except for four: Kuf and Sadik, which is Kates; Ches and Tes, which is Chet. So what happened was, he said the Kates went away from him. So he was worried about that maybe they have chait. They said to him, no, among us, there might not be the kates. There's no kuf tzaddik among us, but there's also no chait either. Right. The reason that the kates went away is a different reason. Hashem didn't want him to reveal the end of time. But it's not because of chait, because there's no ches and tes ba'as either. There's no sin. Okay. So that's one of the reasons that we say Baruch Shem. That's one of the we respond and so on. The Mefarshim answer the following, that no, they did say that, they didn't say it exactly the way we read it, Shema Yisrael. That's the way the Pasuk puts it. They must have added in before the word Yisrael, they must have added in titles. They must have given him some sort of respectful title before they said the word Yisrael, which made it okay, and therefore just the Pasuk doesn't mention that. The Pasuk says Shema Yisrael. But obviously that wasn't just what they said, because that would have been a transgression of Kibud Avay. Okay. But I found a very interesting question. Just an interesting tradition and an interesting question that the Ben Ish Chai brings down. The Ben Ish Chai wrote many, many, many Sfarim. Just so you know, I'm not familiar, I've quoted him many times. Ben Ish Chai was a Sephardic sage who lived in Baghdad. He passed away in 1902, not that long ago, but he was an amazing leader. He was the rabbi of the entire Kahila of Baghdad, which at that time was thousands and thousands of Jews, and he was the undisputed leader. So much so, I once read a story, while we're on the topic, of an Ashkenazi fellow that came, I think, from England. He was traveling and he went to Baghdad. And he was a bit of a troublemaker. And observant Jew, but he was a troublemaker. And somehow he started up with the Ben Ish Chai. And in Baghdad, you don't start off with a Ben Ish-Chai. It's like, it's just, he was such a respected guy. You know, it's not like, he was undisputed. He started with Ben Ish-Chai. And a short time afterwards, this person's lost his parent, one of his parents, a father or mother, and he couldn't get a minion. No one would go to him. He couldn't get the whole of Baghdad, he couldn't get a minion to daven for the Ahmed. They were so upset with him that he started up with the Ben Ish-Chai. Hundreds and thousands of people, he couldn't get a minion because everyone knew this guy you don't touch. He started up with the Ben Ish-Chai. So Ben Ish-Chai was a very big person. Anyway, so he said he wrote many Sfarim, wrote commentary on Gemara, commentary on Chumash, commentary on, but he also has many halachics for him. He was a Rav, he wrote halachics for him. So his name is Rav Yosef Chaim. So, you know, Sephardim have different kinds of names in Ashkenazim. So a particular person had a name called Mazel Tov. Right? That was his name, Mazel Tov. Yeah, but Sephardim have names like Rachamim, Mazel Tov, all these things which are not common Ashkenazi names, but they are common Sephardi names. Now, the minag was in Baghdad, I guess it's Sephardi tradition, in Baghdad at least, that when a woman would give birth to a girl, I don't know why Dafka girl, but that was the thing. That a whole family would come into, I guess when she was recovering already, they would come and they would give her a bracha. And the minag was, they would all pass by her room, go into her for a minute and say Mazel Tov. And go out. That's all they would say. So he went to ask the Rav Shaila, is he allowed to do that? Sorry, not his name was Mazel Tov. Sorry, his mother's name was Mazel Tov. Sorry, her name, that's a woman's name, sorry. Sorry, I got the Shaila wrong. Her name was Mazel Tov. This guy, his mother's name is Mazel Tov, and then he had a sister. So his mother gave birth to a sister. So he went to the Rav to ask, can he do this minag? Can he walk into his mother's room and say Mazel Tov to her? Because he's saying his mother's name. Right? This is how strict, I'm just to tell you how seriously this is taken, right? At the end, he said he can, because he does it, it's done by derech covered, it's done as a respect and it's done as a minag. He's not referring to his mother, it's done on the contrary. The whole minag is to respect the woman who's just given birth. And therefore, he said it was okay because the context was a respectful context. And he said that it was okay to do. But I just thought it was a fascinating question. So I thought I'd share it with you. All got to do with this mitzvah of kibbut aviyah, yiras aviyah. Okay. Now.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What about teachers?
Also, same thing. You're not called teacher by the first name. Why are they called?
All teachers are called by their first name.
Is it
Mora? Torah teachers?
I don't know about Torah, but all schools there.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Israel is a fantastic, beautiful place, and especially today, but it's not well renowned for its manners. I mean, that's not. No, but it's a secular thing that's called teach by first name. I mean, there is. It depends on the time and the culture also, because in the Gemara there were times where, and the Gemara was an interesting thing that in fact most people weren't called by the names, like either Reb someone or Rabbi someone. There were certain leaders, however, that they were so great, and I'm not sure exactly what the explanation is, but they were Dafka called by their first name, and that was a sign of unbelievable respect. But that's not the context you're talking about. And there were only a few like that, like Hillel. Hillel was called Hillel. It wasn't called Reb Hillel. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was called Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Yehuda. Hillel was called Hillel. But that's because he was so great. For some reason, I've forgotten the explanation of why that is. But no, but calling teachers by their first name is a problem. In fact, when I asked if it was a Torah teacher makes it worse, although it doesn't mean it's right to a non-Torah teacher. In fact, the Gemara is very clear that respecting teachers applies to a teacher that teaches you a trade as well, not only a teacher that teaches you Torah. Maybe not at the same level, but it does apply. So I don't know. I think I once shared with either this year or different year. When I came here, I studied. I did my degree in education over here. It started off by going to a postgrad course, and was taught by a very big professor, an unbelievable expert on learning difficulties. And I went. I went together with someone else, the late Zev Simons, Olav Hashalom. We did it together, and. I started with this course, and in the course she was lecturing every week, and there were people that knew her. And I was just fresh out of yeshiva. I mean, that was my, right? I had a smicha, I had a thing, but I mean, it was all my background was yeshiva learning. And I mean, there's about 150 people, it was a big lecture, and people knew her, are asking her questions, they're calling her by her first name. It was the first time I'd heard anything like that, and I was actually shocked. And yeshiva would never do that. Like, I mean, we would, Some teachers in Yeshiva were called by their first name. That was the way they were endeared, but it was always with a Rebbe first. You know, Reb someone, like Reb Yankel, or Reb this, or whatever, Reb Nissen, or whatever, right? But first names, it was unheard of. And like, it was a shock, culture shock. Then I realized, no, that's part of the culture, to make everyone buddy-buddy, and... Mm-hmm. But it's not a Torah thing,
so
at all.
So you don't call the person by the Hebrew name, say, you anglicize it and say, his name's Mordechai, and you call him Mark.
I'm not sure that helps, because it's still it's the same disrespect. It's not, it's about being on first... The Torah perspective is that not, people aren't equal. That's a secular thing. I mean, we're all holy and we're all created in the image of God, and we all need to respect each other, and adults need to respect children, and teachers need to respect students, and so on. There's a different type of respect, but we're not equal. There is a hierarchy. An hierarchy that people who teach you, for example, or parents that give birth to you, you're not their friend on that level. You know. Talking about, you know, a big teacher, or something like a... Yeah, it's interesting. Okay, so, let's just say we've got a sidetrack there. Okay, as I said, there's lots of mitzvahs in this parasha. Let me just have a look at one, famous one, of course, and we're going to go into it a bit. Famous pasuk, couldn't be more famous. Pasuk, give me one second, I'll tell you where it is. Yud Zayin, which is on page... Page 660. Actually, you know what? Let's start from Pasuk Tes Zayin, which is 16. Right. So it says, Loiseilech Rochil be'amecha, do not gossip amongst your friends. That's Rochilus, Lashon Hara. Loisamoid al damre'echa, do not stand in the blood of your friend, which means if you see someone drowning or you see someone in trouble, you need to save them. You can't just be passive and be silent. Ani Hashem. Then it says, "Leisis nazachichel uvecha, do not hate someone in your heart. Hoicheach teichiach esam isecha, rebuke your friend." In other words, reprimand is a mitzvah to do it in a respectful way, obviously, but to point out to someone else when they're doing something wrong. Leisis olav chait, so you don't cause him to do sin. Leisikain veleisitar, do not take revenge or do not bear a grudge. Espenei amecha. Then ve'ahavta lereacha kamoicha. Love your neighbor, your friend, as you do yourself. Ani Hashem, I am God. Right? Ve'hafta l'reacha kamoicha. Love your friend as yourself. As we know today, the concept of Avas Yisrael, loving another fellow Jew, loving people, and so on. Rashi says on this pasuk, famous Rashi, if you want to have a look at it inside, you can. I'll just quote it for you. Rashi says, that's the last Rashi on the page, on the left-hand side. V'hafta l'reacha kamoicha, says Rashi, Omer Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, Ze klal godol b'Torah. This is a general principle in Torah. Right? This is a general principle in Torah. Now, as simple as it seems, or simple as it reads, we always talk about hafta l'reacha kamoicha, often a very, very often quoted pasuk. There are two difficulties with this pasuk. Okay? One difficulty is, how can you really love someone like yourself? Is that possible? Kamoicha, right? And the second difficulty is, what does it mean it's a general principle in Torah? And let me make the question bigger by quoting the famous story. Famous story of the potential convert that came to Hillel, right? Actually went first to Shammai. And he said, teach me the entire Torah while I'm standing on one foot. And Shammai sent him away. He went to Hillel, and he said, teach me the entire Torah standing on one foot. And Hillel said to him, Mada Allah sani lachavercha leisavod, what is hateful to you, do not do to someone else. Ultimately, similar concept to v'haftal re'acha kamoicha, it's a gezunt, right? And Hillel said, even stronger than Zeh klal gadol b'Torah, he said, Zehu kol ha-Torah kula, this is the entire Torah, v'idoch pirushahu, and the rest is just commentary. That is the Torah, and the rest is just commentary. He says. So the first man asks the question, what does that mean? We know the Torah represents two parts. The Torah represents between man and man, and between man and God, right? So we understand, if you want to say it's a klal gadol about Torah, it's a general principle in Torah, or that's the whole Torah with regard to some of the mitzvahs. Now that's just some of the first man explained it that way. In other words, it is, yes, it's a general principle which rules many mitzvahs. Like it's not... The Haftal Recha Kamoicha is not actually one of the 630 mitzvahs, although it is. But how do you do this mitzvah? So we have many other mitzvahs in the Torah which all come under the, they evolve, they're derivatives of this mitzvah. For example, helping someone, not stealing, visiting the sick, comforting the mourners, burying the dead. The Rambam says it's all part of the Haftal Recha Kamoicha. So that's in one sense what it means, a klal gadol. But first of all, so why do we need that general principle? Number one, and number two, why do we mean it's the whole Torah? Why is it the basis of putting on tefillin or keeping Shabbos? Or what's it got to do, right? And so on and so forth. So I'm going to go through a few ideas. First of all, let's just go to the idea of Kamoicha. The Ramban poses a very interesting question. Who's the person that Rashi quotes that said, Zeh klal godol ba-Torah? This is a general principle in Torah. B'haftar Rech Kamoicha, Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva also says something else. Rabbi Akiva said, there's a famous Gemara about the famous scenario of two people traveling in a desert. Right? Famous Gemara. Two people traveling in a desert and they're out of water and they have one person has a kitoin echot shomayim, has a one jug of water. And the scenario is as follows. If the person who has the jug of water drinks the water, he will survive and the other person will die. Right? Very painful scenario. If he shares the water, they'll probably both end up dying because it won't be enough for either of them. Right? So there's a debate in the Gemara. Rabbi Akiva is of the view, and he supports his view by the following phrase. He says, at the end of the day, Chayecha Koidmin, your life comes first. All of after Recha Kamecha, your life comes first. Painful, you've got a jug of water, your friend doesn't. You have the opportunity to save yourself, not to save your friend. Who should you save? Should you maybe give it away to your friend? He says, no. Chayecha koibin, your life comes first. You have a moral obligation to save your own life first. Right? Says the Ramban, so how does that fit in with v'haftal reicha kamoicha? You should love your friend like yourself. You can't love your friend like yourself. At the end of the day, yourself takes priority. Even on a halachic level. Even Rabbi Akiva himself says that. Rabbi Akiva says this is a zek klal gadol b'Torah. He says if in that scenario, chayecha koimin, your life comes first. So the Ramban says, what does it mean to love your friend like yourself? What does that mean? So he says, no, it doesn't mean that. It means like this. He says, very, very nice idea. He says he submits that a person cannot actually love someone else exactly like themselves. Right? Because at the end of the day, it's not possible. On one level, on the Ramban's level. But he says, you've got to like your friend like you love yourself. What does that mean? He says, a person, when they take care of themselves, that's not selective. You don't only give yourself certain things. Taking care of yourself and loving yourself means all-encompassing. You feed yourself, you study, you take care of yourself, you rest, you support yourself. You do many, many things in life that will be supportive of making a wholesome person, right? Says the Ramban, that's how Avas Yisrael has to work. When you love someone else, you can't be selective. You say, listen, I love giving people, I love supporting, feeding people. That's it, but don't ask me for anything else. I'm not interested in teaching people, I'm not interested in their spiritual needs, I'm not interested in putting them through school. That's not my thing. Right? Food, right? Other people say, no, I'm into education, I'm into teaching people. Taking care of their physical needs, that's not my business, right? So he says, that's not kamoicha. That's selective love. And love has to be unconditional and all-encompassing. And says the Ramban, that's what I think, says the Ramban, means b'haftal reicha kamoicha, that it means like yourself, just like you take care of yourself, all-encompassing, you need to take care of other people like that also. You can't limit it to one type of love. Loving someone means you take care of them whatever they need, not whatever you want to do. Okay? There's a fascinating Kliyokar who comments on this klal gadol b'Torah. And he says the following, but before we can understand the Kliyokar, I'm going to share with you a very fascinating medrash. And the medrash says the following. The medrash says the Parshas Kedoshim, as we said before, is a very fundamental parsha. It was said b'hakel, it was said with all the Jews present, similar to another event that was said when all the Jews were present, which is giving of the Torah, Matan Torah. Says the medrash that in Parshas Kedoshim, among all the mitzvahs, the many, many mitzvahs, close to 30 mitzvahs you will find in Parshas Kedoshim, if you look hard, you'll also find the Aseres Hadibros, the Ten Commandments. That's how fundamental Parshas Kedoshim is. Right? This is why. So I'll go through with you, very fascinating. He says like this. The pasuk starts. I'm not going to find it. It will take too much time to find it in the chumash. I'll just quote a few. He says the parsha Kedoshim starts. Be holy, ki ani Hashem elokeichem. I am Hashem your God. That corresponds to the one of the commandments. The first one, Anochi Hashem elokeichem. I am Hashem your God. Second of all, it says the second one of the commandments is do not follow any other gods. In Kedoshim it says elokeim asechel asaselchem. You're not allowed to create idols. It's a bit of a different mitzvah, but it's the same idea. You're not allowed to actually have images in your house. You're not allowed to possess an idol. Okay. Then it says, "Do not swear." Loisisa, do not use my name in vain. Says that third one of the Aseres Adibros in Parsha Kedosh. You have a mitzvah. Lishishavu lishmi, don't swear my name falsely. In the Aseres Adibros, it says, God, "Remember the Shabbos." Over here, right next to the commandment of honoring parents, it says, "Eshabsoisa tishmora, keep my Shabbos." The Aseres Adibros says, "Honor your father and mother." We just learned the pasuk, "Fear your father and mother." Again, one of the Ten Commandments. All right. In the Ten Commandments, it says, "Loi titzach, do not murder." So we just learned the pasuk that says, "Loi samod al dam re'echa, do not stand by idly while your friend is in danger. Don't let your friend drown, or don't let your friend be damaged, and stand by idly." That's the same thing as don't murder. In other words, murder is not just an active thing; murder is a passive thing. If you have an opportunity to save a person from being hurt and you don't, that's like hurting himself. So that's the same thing as murder. The Aseres Dibros says, "Loi sinav, do not commit adultery." At the end of Kedoshim, we have all the forbidden relationships. It talks about the consequence for adultery. Like Tignog, do not steal. The Prasha says, do not steal. Although actually, according to many Mephoshim, it's talking about different kind of stealing. The stealing of the Aseres Adibros is kidnapping, stealing of his money, but doesn't matter. It's the same similar idea. In the Aseres Adibros, it says, don't give false testimony. So over here it says, don't talk Lashon Hara. Similar thing, Rochel, it says, that's actually worse than Lashon Hara. In our parasha it says, Lo Seilech Rochel, don't talk Rochilus, which is transporting Lashon Hara, spreading false rumors about people. It's all part of Rochilus, and therefore it's a similar thing that has difference. And finally, this is very interesting, the Aseres Dibros says, Lo Sachmoid, do not covet, do not want things that belong to other people. Right? And over here it says, V'ahavta l'reacha kamecha, love your fellow as yourself. What's the connection? It says the Kli Yoker like this. When the convert, the potential convert, went to Hillel and said, teach me the whole Torah while on one foot, the Kli Yoker says he wasn't poking fun. Hillel, Shammai got a bit upset with him. He said, oh, you're making yourself crazy. This, according to the Kli Yoker, actually what really happened was this potential convert actually asking a serious question. What he was asking was, He wasn't ignorant. He understood a little bit about the Torah already. He was saying, give me something that will be the foundation of Torah. I understand there's a big Torah to learn. I get that. I'm not expecting to learn the entire Torah one foot. But teach me what is the foundation of Torah on one foot. Now, the Kli Yoker develops this and he says an interesting thing. The truth is, the Gemara, a different place, says that that's already happened. Habakkuk did that. The Gemara says that one of the prophets, Habakkuk, put the entire Torah into one principle, one value. What is that? Emunah, belief. That's the foundation of Torah. V'tzadik be'emunosa yichye. A righteous person lives with emunah, says the Gemara in Marcus. It's a pasuk, yeah? Tell him. But what was the guy really asking? He was saying like this. Yeah, I understand that. But if you look at the Ten Commandments, so it starts with Anochi Hashem Elokecha. It starts with I am Hashem your God. That's the foundation. That's Emunah. But what he was looking for was a different foundation. He was looking for a foundation for the mitzvahs between man and man. What's the principle that's going to get me? What's the principle that's going to drive all the civil mitzvahs? So the Kli Yoker learns, as other Mefarshim do, that when Hillel said that this is the whole Torah, the rest is commentary, or when Rabbi Akiva says this is a principle, the entire principle of the Torah, it didn't mean the whole Torah. It meant the part of Torah which is Bein Adam Lachavera, between man and man. But what he was seeking something to drive everything, to drive the mitzvah of helping others and caring for others and not stealing and so on and so forth. Maybe a little bit like the Ramban says, what's going to drive me to not be selective in my love for everything, to take care of everyone's needs, all needs, everything's needs? What's going to drive that? Said Hillel like this. Let me explain to you, says Hillel. You know the Medrash that says that the Ten Commandments are in the Torah, right? Are in Parashat Kedoshim. How do the Ten Commandments work? The first one is Anochi Hashem Elokecha. The last one is Lo Sachmoid, do not covet, right? Now, it's a very interesting commandment that, because it's a strange commandment. When I tell someone you should bury the dead, that's an action. You should not steal. You should not murder. You should not harm people. You should not insult people. You should visit them when they're sick. The positives and negatives, right? All actions. Lo sachmoy, do not covet, is a very strange mitzvah. It's nothing to do with what you do. It's about the feeling that I have. Now, in fact, Mefarshim battle halachically to how do you translate the lo sachmoy? What does it actually mean? And some do explain it to be a bit of an action, like if I drive you crazy that I want to have your motor car and I'm not going to steal it from you, but I'm going to make you meshuga until you agree for me to buy it from you, that could be a transgression of Lo Sachmoid. Okay, on a halachi level. But in wording, that's not what it's saying. It's saying you shouldn't want. Right? Says Hillel, you know why? Because the foundation of the first five commandments is Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Emunah. Emunah brings you not to serve Avodah Zarah. Emunah brings you to keep Shabbos. Emunah brings you not to use Hashem's name. Emunah even brings to honoring parents, because we know honoring parents belongs to the first half of the Ten Commandments, because it's a sign of my appreciation for Hashem's creating me, and therefore my appreciation of my parents for the ones who are Hashem's messengers for bringing me into the world, and so on and so forth, right? The foundation of the second part of the Luchos is the last mitzvah. Last mitzvah of Leisachbet. It's the feeling. All problems of Avas Yisrael come from our mindset. Come from jealousy. Why do people steal? Because they have to have what belongs to someone else. And jealousy leads to murder, the Chazal tell us. Because on extreme cases, if you can't get what you want, you'll harm the other person. Insulting other people comes from a mindset. It comes from a feeling of insecurity, or a feeling of being better than the other person, and so on and so forth. It all comes from Lo Sachmoid. It all comes from that one commandment. If you look at the person properly, if you feel towards the problem properly, if you believe in Hashem, if you connect the first and the tenth commandment, which is the Emunah and the tenth commandment get connected, so you believe that what you have is what you meant to have and what you don't have is not meant to, it belongs to someone else and it's not yours, and Hashem is in control and so on and so forth, you won't be jealous, and if you won't come to steal and you won't come to harm the other person, and you will help the other person. It all comes from the way you look at the person inside. It comes from your perception, your mindset, your feeling towards the other person. Right? And therefore, in this parasha, it's the same way. That's why in this parasha, Rabbi Akiva says, it's a klal gadol b'Torah. Why? Because in this parasha, we have a repeat of the Ten Commandments. So what happens is, the first one is in the beginning of the parasha, Ani Hashem Elokechem, which corresponds to Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and says the Medrash, Ve'haft l'recha k'moicha, corresponds to Lo Sachmoid. Because just like Lo Sachmoid in the Aseres Dibros, not coveting, is the foundation of all man-to-man mitzvahs, it's spelled out differently in this Torah, in this parasha, but it's the same idea. The whole foundation, says Rabbi Akiva, is ve'ahavta l'recha kamecha. Ve'ahavta l'recha kamecha is the love you have towards someone else. It's not an action, but it's the way you feel towards another person. That will bring everything else. That will bring the good things you do for other person, and that will prevent you from doing the bad things to the other person. Right? Is that clear? So therefore, the way the Kliarkas explain it is that, yes, it's the whole Torah, the rest is commentary. It's the foundation of the whole Torah. It's the rule, the principle of the whole Torah, like Rabbi Akiva says. But as we're talking more about the principle part of the Torah, that is between man and man.
Generic
thing, because it's got to start. Exactly, it starts. Yes, it starts from a foundation. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
So that seems to overrule.
Well, if you get the foundation right, then the rest just follows.
That's the foundation.
Obviously, you have to engage in specifics. You have to work out what they mean and what it means. But it's got to start from a driving force, which is the general rule.
Yeah.
But in the 10 minutes that are left, I want to take this one step further and share with you a different explanation, which comes from the famous 32nd chapter of Tanya that the Alter Rebbe writes. And he says like this. Actually, when Hillel said that this is the whole Torah and the rest is commentary, one actually could explain that it's the basis of the entire Torah, not just between man and man. How so? So there he addresses both questions together, and he says, how actually, v'haft l'recha k'moicha? How can you love another person mamash like yourself? Going back to that question. Now, we're not talking about the halachic problems, chayecha koibin, that's halacha, okay, if it's between the two, you've got to take care of yourself, that's your moral obligation. But even just generally, how do I look at a person like I look at myself, that I'm different to you? We're all different. So therefore, the Alter Rebbe says the famous principle goes like this. Each person has a guf and a neshama, each person has a body and a soul. Our differences come from our body. In other words, our differences are external. Our differences are superficial. Our differences is not the core essence of who we are. One person looks one way, a person looks a different way, one person thinks one way, that's all the physical expression of our being. That's the externalities. Like the Gemara says, "Kashem she'ein partzufehem shavos, kach ein deyusein shavos." Just like no two people look alike, no two people think alike. But you see the comparison where the Gemara is comparing it to looks. Looks, opinions, perspectives, that's all differences, but all external. Just like the parts, just like our look is external, even though we think is external. It's not our core essence. What is our core essence? The neshama. And in the neshama itself, the essence of the neshama. The essence of the neshama, as we call the godly soul, there's no differences. We all come from one source. Every neshama is taken from the same source. It's a godly spark. So the sameness between us, what unites us, what makes us, what we call the achim, brothers, one family, one av echad l'galona, we have one father, that's the neshama. What makes us different is the guf. Right? Therefore, how can you come, the real fulfillment of you can help other people, but to really fulfill the mitzvah of the haftal reacha kamoicha properly, you've got to come and absorb and internalize this idea that the neshama is the main part of the person. If we make that goof, if we make the body the main part of the person, then the emphasis will be on the differences. We won't come to Avat L'Recha Kumecha. If we get to the perspective, we have the mindset that the main part of who I am, my identity, my real identity is not my body but my soul. It's my godliness, my spirituality, my connection to Hashem. Then I'll be able to emphasize the sameness and I'll be able to reach the level of Avat L'Recha Kumecha. Yeah? Therefore explains that therefore becomes the foundation not just to misses between man and man. It becomes the foundation to every part of Yiddishkeit. Because Yiddishkeit only works when the neshama is more important than the body. When the neshama is who we really are, then our focus becomes less materialistic and more spiritual, more godly. When our neshama is given primary priority, then we engage in what the neshama needs. We engage in Torah mitzvahs, we engage in Torah learning, we engage in mitzvahs, we engage in anything that's connected to God. When it's not, when that guf, what we call like barasach tzura, hachomer ala tzura, when our physicality becomes our focus, and our life becomes all about what we can do for our guf, ignoring or paying less attention to the neshama, not only our avas yisrael will be affected, our general Yiddishkeit will be affected. Because then we give more importance to what's important for the body and less importance to what's important for the soul. And that's what Hillel told him. The person says, give me one driving force to be the foundation of the whole Torah. Hillel says, both parts of the Torah are driven by one thing. The ability to do this mitzvah haftar reicha kamoicha. This is the test. If you can do this mitzvah haftar reicha kamoicha, it can only be done if you give more importance to your neshama over your body. And then the whole Torah will just follow. The rest of the Torah will follow. Both parts of the Torah. So if you learn it like that, then it becomes literal. When he told him, this is the Torah and the rest is commentary, he didn't only mean the parts of Torah that are between man and man, but he meant the entire Torah. Because you can only achieve this mitzvah if you're on that level where the neshama is more important than the body, and then the whole Torah follows in a much greater, a much deeper way. Okay.